Welcome you to another edition of Gateway to Baseball Heaven. I'm your host, Daniel Shopdaw, C70 at the bat, at C70 on Twitter, and with me, as always, is Tara Wellman from Birds on the Black and Bird Seeds, and you'll find her at Tara Wellman on Twitter. It's been a fun weekend because the Cardinals went to Cincinnati, and, which is not something they always do, beat up on a team they should beat up on. And granted, the Reds gave them a lot of it, but today's game was much more dramatic than it needed to be. But Tara, it's kind of nice. Not only one, Cardinals go in, get a four-game winning streak. They go above 500. They're sitting in second place. And I know that there's still some underlying problems, but we can take a moment to appreciate that this was a good weekend.
Yeah, I think that's all you really can do when you're 2.5 weeks into the season and it's been a bit of a struggle so far. And then you go into a place like Cincinnati and not pleasant conditions, and you're able to complete a four-game sweep. I don't care if it's the Reds or if it's the Yankees at this point. You know, you have to beat the team that's in front of you, and that's all that you can do. So the Cardinals going in and taking care of business in Cincinnati, I think, was a great sign. I've voiced some concerns about the sustainability of the process that led to those wins, and I'm sure we can talk more about that, but it's still, regardless of how the win happened, the Cardinals got the wins they needed to get. And they didn't always do that last year. They didn't always do that the year before. So if they want to make a run at the postseason in 2018, these are the kinds of series that they have to take advantage of, especially when the Reds are down as much as they are right now.
And before we get farther, you gotta feel for the Reds and their fan base. I mean, yes. 2-13, you look at, I mean, we are just 2 weeks into the season, and you look at that stadium and you can almost count the people on one hand, it feels like. And I know the weather wasn't good, but still, the team wasn't either. I mean, they're 9 games out of first already. And, you know, you'd like to at least get through April and have some hope, but I mean, it's been beat on. I had a friend of mine at church that's a Red, he grew up in Ohio, he's a Reds fan, and you know, it's tough already, yeah. And I feel for him. I hope the Cardinals never get to that point of view. But right now, the Cardinals are a game up on the Cubs, which is nice, before this series, and somehow looking up at the Pirates, which makes absolutely no sense from the point of view. But let's talk a little bit about some of the controversies or questions or that we may have come up with other this weekend. And the biggest one is, who is ending ball games? With Greg Holland obviously signed the $14 million deal, pitched against the Brewers and did not pitch well. And since then has not appeared in a save situation. But Norris seems to be taking those spots. I know the Cardinals were talking about the fact that he's still, you know, in his spring training, and they'll kind of switch over to that at some point in time. But when is that going to happen? I mean, that's kind of a weird way to use your $14 million guy, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I think it was a weird way to use your $14 million guy to bring him in when they did in the first place. And you know what? You can make that argument both ways, I think, and do so convincingly. But the reality is they had no way of knowing whether he was actually ready or not. I mean, a couple of appearances against low A hitters is not really a good way to test your closer before you bring him in, you know, in the quite possibly the most pressure-packed situation you can in the first week of the season. So it wasn't a great opportunity to make a first impression. I think it was probably pretty ill-advised, and I think the way that they've gone about it since then sort of says as much. You know, the conversation has gone from, no, he's our guy, he's our closer, we have full confidence in him, to, well, you know, he just doesn't feel great about his stuff yet. And I think that's a pretty significant difference from where they were on day one with Greg Holland. So it's a little bit of uncharted territory as far as I'm concerned, as far as the Cardinals in recent history signing a closer on opening day. And you have to try to figure out what to do there. So they didn't do it well. I think they're trying to recoup from that and move forward in a way that's going to be productive for him and put him in a better position to be that $14 million man and to be the closer at the end of those big games and those big moments.
Yeah, it is. It is weird because sometimes I think when we look back at it, we kind of have this idea that they had to bring him up at the end of the 10 days. And that's not the case. I mean, he could have technically been in the minors all year long. I mean, I'm sure that's not going to happen. But still, I mean, nobody pitches just two innings in the spring.
Yeah.
You know, that there may be people that just pitch two innings in a month if they're the eighth man on the staff. But that's another story. In the spring, everybody gets a lot of time. And to think Greg Holland was ready after facing, eight, nine A-ball hitters is a little strange. You would think there was no big rush to get him on this major league roster. Especially when you had a guy like Mike Myers who went down for that, who hadn't actually pitched in the majors at the time. Well, much. It just felt like they wanted to make sure he was there for the homestand and or something of that nature. But now they're paying the price because they can't really send him back down because they had to do some finagling, really, to get him to go down in the first place. They're not going to send him back down. And so now he's got to have spring training at the major league level, and that's less than optimal. He's looked a little bit better, and hopefully that transition will come. But on the meantime, Bud Norris is kind of looking like, hey, you didn't really have to go out and spend this money because you already had a closer.
Yeah.
Is that going to continue? And if it does, how hard does it become for maybe even Mike Matheny to make that change?
You know, I think, I don't know, honestly, I feel like Bud Norris being successful in a potential closer role might be one of the better things that could happen to the Cardinals bullpen, because if he wasn't, if the Cardinals didn't have that opportunity, one, I think they probably would have pushed Jordan Hicks to be there, and I don't think that that's probably the best idea right now, although, I mean, not because he couldn't handle it, just because I don't think that's really the best strategy with Jordan Hicks, but then, you know, if you bring in someone like Greg Holland and he's supposed to be the guy and you don't have anybody that's really claimed it, then Mike Matheny's habits would lead him to put Greg Holland out there every time, whether he was in a position to do so or not. So having someone like Norris maybe come in as a little bit of a surprise and be capable in those situations, although he did make things interesting in tonight's game, but that is what you have to do to be a Cardinals closer. So he's just, you know, getting that out of the way early and proving that he can still get the outs when it counts. So I think that it's a good thing because I think it takes a little bit of the pressure off of Holland, but I also think that it eliminates a possible bad move by Matheny by having another guy out there. I think we have seen in the last couple of seasons that he really gets comfortable with one guy, and that becomes a problem the further you go into the season. So if he has more than one legitimate option, I think that it's probably a good thing for a Mike Matheny run team at this point.
Yeah, it most likely is. And I just think that if you had told anybody a month ago that the Cardinals would have three saves on the year after, 15 games, and all of them would be from Bud Norris, nobody would believe you. I mean,
no.
You know, again,
okay,
even without the Greg Holland thing, everybody expected Dominic Leone or somebody of that nature, or at least a bevy of people to take over spots. And it's been, and I think we could really see, as you said, kind of Matheny already settling into that using Norris thing. I think he came in a couple times where I didn't necessarily expect him to. It was like automatic.
Yeah.
That's where Matheny's going to go right now. And that, I don't think there's a big problem with that. It's just kind of interesting. The bullpen then comes a little bit more interesting, possibly as early as tomorrow. with Luke Gregerson, who has done his rehab work. Actually, Luke Gregerson has pitched longer in the minor leagues than Greg Holland did, even after having a full spring, so we'll see how that works. But Gregerson coming up, I assume that means Mike Myers goes back down just because there's nobody else. Maybe John Brebbia does. How do you think that's going to – is that going to be a big issue, or are we going to automatically just kind of slide him in?
You know, I've been a little bit concerned about Gregerson since they signed him. I don't quite know what to expect from him. I think there's this idea that he's going to be sort of that next great reclamation project where he comes in off of a less than stellar season and is suddenly the greatest thing that ever came out of the Cardinals bullpen. And I say that expectation being from the front office, not from the fan base. But I just don't see what he necessarily brings to the table that the Cardinals don't already have in a number of other guys. Now, there's really no harm in having an extra arm, as long as you actually use it. But I think that it could, I don't know. I guess I feel like I just need to see him pitch. And I need to see what he can do against, you know, not minor league hitters on a consistent basis, what he's going to do in high pressure situations, what he's going to do when it's not, you know, a clean inning against minor leaguers where he's really just there to knock some of the rust off, because the environment's going to be different, the situation's going to be different, and I don't really have a good gauge on what to expect from him. So you know, we've seen unfortunately we have seen Tyler Lyons struggle a little bit. Mm-hmm. We've seen Matt Bowman be successful, but also, you know, have sort of this track record of being overused. And we've seen, you know, some other guys, some of the younger guys, Tui go on the DL, some of the guys coming up, whether it's Myers or Brebbia or whoever else it is, that is sort of one of those players that you stick in because you need to fill a spot. And if the Cardinals have one more guy that they can do that with, that's going to work to their advantage. I'm just not quite sure what spot he fills.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to have to wait and see where Gregerson is. That being said, he's one of the few guys that has yet to allow a run in 2019. Yeah. I mean, he gave up, you know, he only pitched three innings in the spring, but they were scoreless. He's pitched four times in this rehab assignment. All have been scoreless. Again, it's competition. It's all that kind of stuff you don't know. But if he is the kind of what we thought we might get out of Luke Gregerson, and you could put him into the seventh inning and put Bud Norris in the eighth inning and Greg Holland in the ninth inning, I mean, that's a pretty potent punch at the end. And then you still have Lyons, and you still have Leon, and you still have Bowman to get his daily work in. I feel really good about this bullpen, and I know we haven't seen it together, and I know we haven't seen it necessarily click as much as we want it to, but it still feels like if we can get six innings out of the starter with a lead, things are going to go better than they did last year, which is a low bar to clear. I really, but I feel, I don't think that there's really anybody out there right now. And like you said, Tyler Lyons has scuffled a little bit. And you necessarily know what you're going to get with Bowman out, but he's been pretty solid. I don't think there's anybody that you, when the bullpen door opens, you're like, oh, shoot, that guy's coming in.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of guys out there that you're like, he's going to get the job done, or he's most likely going to get the job done. And a lot of those guys are going to get the job done by striking out a whole bunch of people, like Jordan Hicks can do. So I don't know. I think this is a very interesting situation when it comes down to the bullpen, and I think it really has a chance to be a strong suit for this team, and it needs to be, because these starters are not going to go a whole lot of innings. We saw Adam Wainwright go seven innings this week. If that happens again this year, I'll be kind of surprised. I just don't think that that's going to be Adam Wainwright. And most of these other guys, Michael Walker, he may not go six innings this year. You know, Luke Weaver is going to be a guy they're going to kind of watch. You know, I don't know what happens when Alex Reyes comes back. except for Carlos Martinez, and we've talked about this before, those guys are just not going to go deep into games. So you've got to have those good arms, and arms that you can use, you know, if Holland's out because he's pitched 2 or 3 days in a row, then you've got a Bud Norris that can come in and some replacements like that. So it's a good thing. Now let's talk a little bit about Wainwright. Wainwright goes out and throws 7 innings, gives up 2 solo home runs and 1 other run. So he gives up 3 runs, 7 innings. I don't think he looked like vintage Wainwright, but he definitely looked a lot better than that first outing. What did you think? I mean, is this kind of a mirage, or is this something that we might be able to see every once in a while?
You know, I think it's a little too early to say, simply because we've seen sort of the two ends of the spectrum of Adam Wainwright so far. You know, we've seen him look like a very capable starting pitcher that can go out there and pitch 7 good innings and put his club in a good position to win. We've also seen him go out there and look like he can't find the strike zone and he's not going to make it through the fourth, which is not sustainable, considering that's a problem for multiple starters in this rotation. So I don't know. I think there's always going to be this part of me that is just desperately hoping that Adam Wainwright will be Adam Wainwright of old one more time, one more season. But I don't know how realistic that is, simply because we've not seen it in so long. We've seen him over the last 2 seasons go out and have these flashes of brilliance that he just can't replicate. Mm-hmm. So to see it at all is a great thing, but to sort of buy in after one good start is maybe a little bit unrealistic. I think, you know, Adam Wainwright against the Cubs is always a little terrifying to me. Adam Wainwright against the Cubs at Wrigley is maybe even a little more terrifying to me. But he does seem to find ways to get it done when the odds all seem stacked against him. But I think as important as his second start was to sort of establishing what his role with this team could be, I think this start is equally important, because it's great if you can do it once, but if you can't put back-to-back good starts together, then your effectiveness and then eventually your value is going to be limited.
Yeah, I don't remember if it was last year or the year before. I'd have to go back and look at the game logs and see, but it was 1 year recently where, you know, like 30%, 40% maybe of Adam Wainwright starts were scoreless. I don't know, the innings varied, but he didn't give up any runs in that time period. Yeah. The problem was, when he did give up runs, there were a lot of runs. You know, I mean, this is a guy that, you know, even in those 2 years, had an ERA over at least 4, and last year was over 5. When you're giving up and you have scoreless outings in there, you know that those other ones are kind of ugly. And so you're right. It is early to sell. But one, it was very disappointing to see how many people that were just jumping all over Wainwright for giving up a home run to Eric Thames, who pretty much owns April. And, you know, and that was the one that, and I guess it was Thames, is that Bader almost caught. You know, Wainwright looked fairly solid. I mean, if he can give you a quality start of 3 innings, 3 runs, and 6 innings, it's great, and then give you that extra inning, that's just gravy. I was really surprised at the comments there. I think it was kind of a little bit of holdover from last time. But I think that's going to be what we're going to do every time out. We hold our breath when Wainwright gets out there, and if he looks bad, then people are going to be calling for his retirement, and if he looks good, then they hold our breath till the next time. Yes. That's just going to be the way this goes this year. I don't think there's ever going to be any confidence in Adam Wainwright, you know, more so maybe than there is now, but you know, overall, I don't think anybody's ever going to not hold their breath when he's out there. And you're right. Him going up against the Cubs in Wrigley Field has potential to be kind of not good. Hopefully it will be better than we think. But we will find out. We talked a minute ago about Luke Gregerson coming off the DL, but it also is about to be time for Jed Jerko to return to the club. Jerko has, you know, did one of those super intense minor league games where he gets to hit like anytime he wants to and all the time, and he gets like 8 at bats in a game or something like that, you know, that kind of thing. And it seems like he's about ready to go. He'll probably join the team in the Chicago series as well. And then we get into who's going to play where. It's a nice little game that we get to play every day. because Jose Martinez is hitting, and I don't think anybody doubts that Jose Martinez is going to be in the lineup and probably not going to play outfield because he's got enough trouble at first. You've got Matt Carpenter, who has struggled at the bat. He has struggled a bit in the field, although not as bad as I think some of us expected him when he's playing third all the time. And then you have Colton Wong, who has not necessarily been on fire with the bat either, to probably be understating it. You know, I know what you feel about Colton Wong, and I do not want to, you know, put this on you, but it becomes difficult to see how, and we've talked, it's kind of a continuation earlier on in the season, though, how Jed Jerko and Matt Carpenter and Colton Wong all coexist in this little sphere of, you know, two positions available.
Yeah, it is. And my, you know, personal opinion about Colton Wong aside, he's got to contribute. He's got to produce something in order to maintain his spot in the lineup. And, you know, as much as I think he would benefit from just kind of being out there every day and left alone, I also think that, you know, if you're hitting a .197 or whatever he's at on the year, you don't have much of a leg to stand on when there are better options. So, you know, I think that the way that he's been handled the last couple of years has probably led to some of the inconsistency, but I also think that the lack of production doesn't help him change the narrative. So, you know, when you're looking at Jed Jerko coming back, who's a guy that can be a huge boost in the lineup, whether it's off the bench or in the field, when you're looking at the defensive alignment as well, you know, there are a lot of pieces to move around, and I'm not sure that I have confidence in Mike Matheny in his ability to move guys in and out of the lineup in a way that makes sense for all of them. But I do think that it's inevitable that Colton's not going to get as much playing time as he would like to have as long as he's hitting the way that he is. And that's just the unfortunate reality of being one of too many infielders that can't all play at the same time.
Yeah, and I mean, you look at, you know, you don't look at just batting average, but if you did, you know, Colton's hitting .150, Matt Carpenter's hitting .160 after today's game, and obviously Carpenter's got a little bit more, you know, patience, a little bit more power that he's shown this year, although still not to the levels that we would like. It does become difficult. Now, if Jerko struggles and it becomes a little bit, you know, maybe it's more, it opens the door for Wong to get back out there, but, you know, Colton's had a good, basically, 10 days, if not more, where it's pretty much just been him, besides that, you know, home opener thing aside, which we've already discussed. Where it's been pretty much just him. I mean, he's got 10 days, and yes, maybe he put some pressure on himself because he knows he has 10 days to actually do something, but he also knows he's going to be out there every day, and he hasn't been able to do much, and so that does become very difficult for the argument of he should be out there. I mean, his glove is good, but, you know, Matt Carpenter moving to second is not a bad thing either. So, I don't know. I don't know what this is, but I do feel like it's probably going to put Wong on the bench for a while, especially if Jerko comes back hitting well. And like you said, it's questionable whether Mike Matheny can do this juggling act. We've kind of not seen that in his career as a manager. So,
you know, and I think I'm working on a little bit of self-promotion. I'm working on the Cubs-Cardinals series preview for this week, and I was listening to a bit of the Cardinals podcast that is that Corey Finneran, the guest on my series preview, is the host of. And they were talking about Javier Baez the other day. And I tried to make this point a couple of different times, and I'm still not sure I've made it effectively. But he made the point in regards to Baez that there really is likely only one scenario for Baez to be successful in the major leagues, and that is to be on a team where he sort of has the luxury to just be who Javi Baez is. He's going to make some dumb mistakes. He's going to strike out by swinging out of his shoes. He's going to, bat flip when he maybe shouldn't bat flip, but all of that is just sort of who he is. And when he's in that sort of zone where he's confident in what he's doing and how he's doing it, he can be a really dynamic player. I made the statement the other day that I think that Colton Wong is very similar. And I got a lot of pushback because I think people are thinking that I'm trying to compare Javi Baez the player and Colton Wong the player, and their skill sets are different. So that's not the point I'm trying to make. But I think that Colton Wong, when he's been at his best in his career, he does have a little bit of extra flair. He does have a little bit of an attitude. And when he's confident, he's hitting the ball well. He's making plays that no one else on this team is going to make. He's doing things that can light up the dugout, that can light up the guys on the field, that can just ignite an audience watching him play. He's capable of that kind of excitement, but he doesn't necessarily have that luxury of being on a team where he can just sort of be left out there to do his own thing. The Cardinals have spent a long time trying to carefully craft Colton Wong into this specific thing that maybe isn't quite who he is. So that's the downside of being that sort of player that has a little bit, that's a little bit eccentric in the way that he goes about his business, and being on a pretty straight-laced team and having to sort of play by someone else's rules to a certain extent in a way that is a little bit limiting. And that I'm saying that out loud, and I can already hear the people telling me that it's just an excuse for Colton not producing. It's not, because the second part of that is Baez actually, does things that help them win games. At this point, Colton doesn't. Mm-hmm. And if he's not going to get the opportunity to just go out there and strike out as much as he needs to and ground into as many double plays as happen, because good things are going to happen when he gets around to making solid contact, then he's going to have to change his approach. And he has to figure out how to contribute in smaller doses than he would get as the consistent everyday guy. And if he can't do that, if he can't adapt, then he's going to lose his spot. And as much as I don't want that to happen, that's the reality of the Colton Wong situation in 2018, is that if he doesn't find a way to produce in limited opportunities or in extended ones, he's going to lose his spot.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of think about, if this guy could just be left alone and play. But the first time I remember hearing that really, really as an issue was Tyler Green. Who, was this minor league,
I can't believe you would do this to me in a conversation about Colton Wong, bring up Tyler Green.
I'm sorry. I hate to. It's nothing personal, Tara. But, the prospect that couldn't miss, and mm-hmm. that Tony La Russa wouldn't play, and when he played like once a week, and they'd come in and he might play a couple games in a row, and if he just get a chance to play, that he would hit, and then he got a chance to play and he didn't hit. And I think about that with Randall Grichuk. It's kind of that idea we thought, they're going to send him up to Toronto and he's going to play every day and he's going to be able to, he's going to still struggle, but he's going to hit some home runs, blah, blah, blah. And last I looked, he was hitting 071. And granted, 2.5 weeks, you don't know. But that's what, that's what concerns me to some degree, is we have seen Colton do something in the past, and we've seen him be productive, and even just last year he was.
Yep.
So you've got to feel like, if he plays, he probably will hit, but you know, what if he doesn't? And you're
right. I mean, he also didn't get off to a terrific start last year, and then it ended up being a pretty solid season overall. So I think that's the other thing. We're 2.5 weeks in.
Right.
I mean,
right.
Colton may not be playing very well, but there have been other guys that have looked pretty bad so far. Matt Carpenter hasn't looked great so far this spring. So it's not like Colton's the only one that has had a rough start. But the point is, he doesn't have the opportunity to start slow this year because there are too many infielders who all need to play at some point. And Mike Matheny is the kind of guy that's probably going to ride the hot hand unless it's a grizzled veteran who's going to play every day for the rest of eternity. And Colton's not that.
This is true. And I do not want to cast aspirations upon Colton Wong, especially because you'll never talk to me again. But I think that, and you're right, he did start off slow last year and he did have a fine year. And, you know, if he gets that chance to play, but, you know, with Turco coming back, and you're right, it would also be different if everybody was hitting 300 in this lineup and he was hitting 150. You know, his 150 average is like fourth on the team or something. I mean, it's not, but it feels like it. So, you're right. 2.5 weeks, it's hard to know, but it is that situation where he needed to grasp this.
Yeah, and he didn't.
Right, and that's kind of somewhat of his career. He's had a chance here and there, and he didn't get a hold of it when he could, and by the time he had a chance to, you know, by the time he looked good, it was the moment it passed him by. So, I don't know. Hopefully, and who knows? You know, again, baseball has a way of working these things out. Somebody else may get hurt, and he'll get another shot at playing pretty much every day, and maybe he'll grasp that, but it looks like his playing time will be cut into here pretty soon. I'm trying to think. I guess that's probably, we've run about 30 minutes. Is there anything else that you want to talk about or I feel like we should talk about before we wrap it tonight?
I think that I'm very interested to see how the success this weekend translates when they're not playing the Reds. because it's one thing to come off of a series like this and turn it into a little bit of a run. It's a different thing to come off a series like this and go right back to, not being able to score runs or your starters not getting out of the fourth inning or whatever it was in any one of those given games in the first couple of series of the year. So there's no better test, perhaps, than heading to Wrigley Field when it's going to be like 35 degrees all week and trying to beat the Cubs at their own game. It's interesting looking at those two teams. They're very similar in a lot of respects right now. Neither one of them is really taking advantage of all of the opportunities that they have. But they both have some concerning, you know, hitting with runners in scoring position or the strikeout numbers or whatever, that all may be a bit inflated just because of the small sample size. So there's still really no better way to tell what the Cardinals can be than to put them up against the team that they are, trying to compete with. And that will be no small task this week if the weather has anything to say about it.
It's true. I guess the good thing is that if they do struggle against the Cubs, hey, the Reds are back in. They're in town next weekend. So,
true.
You know, we can maybe reset again.
Hopefully get a better shot at that home record when the Reds come to town.
Very true. Very true. All right, well, Tara and I will not be recording next Sunday because we will be at Busch Stadium as the annual Blogger Day events unfold. So we'll hopefully watch the Reds lose again to the Cardinals, hopefully by more than 3-2, and not have a lot of late inning drama because that doesn't seem to work well for us in Blogger events.
No.
But Tara and I are probably going to do a show on Monday after we get back. We will do a crossover show. We'll have Alan Medlock join us. We'll probably go on the Maybe Unusual label, but we will probably get together and talk about the weekend, talk about what we learned, talk about the conversation with Mo and Bill DeWitt the third. So look for that there. We'll have it tweeted out and all that kind of stuff. And of course, you know, keep up with Tara. Go subscribe to her YouTube channel if you haven't already, which you probably have. But if you haven't, go do that so you can get all the About Last Nights and all the previews. Because Tara listened to a Cubs podcast
The things that I do for you people. Absolutely. I listened to 3 episodes of the Cubs podcast. I mean, listen, let me tell you about taking one for the team.
I don't even want to imagine. So you owe Tara a subscription over at YouTube. So
there you go.
All right. Well, until we do get together again, that's Tara and I'm Daniel. Good night.